Like to turn this morning to the book of John, chapter 5. Very familiar passage of Scripture, one that we've preached series of messages from, and many messages. There's so many directions that you can go, so many applications. But John chapter 5, verse 1 through 16. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these, that is, the five porches, lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered. And here's what they were doing. They were waiting for the moving of the water. And here's why. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water, and whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatever disease he had. And a certain man was there, which had an infirmity, 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie, and knew that he had been now a long time in that case or condition, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, took up his bed, and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews, therefore, because it was the Sabbath, said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed was not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and saith unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore, did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day? John is the only one of the four gospel writers to give record of this event. It's one of the many healing miracles performed by Christ. All of the healing miracles in some way or another picture the greatest miracle of all, the salvation of a soul. But they also picture the healing of the various spiritual diseases that God's people can have. So all through the Gospels, we see Jesus performing these miracles, giving strength to crippled legs, causing shriveled limbs to flourish, giving movement to paralysis, giving sight to blinded eyes, hearing to deaf ears, words to speechless mouths, cleansing to defiled lepers, relief to the fevered and plagued, and even life to the dead. And again, they all picture the grace of God. They all picture the miracle of salvation. All through the Gospels, as we've said many times, we see Jesus showing up in the lives of men, women, and children of a variety of backgrounds. These people were, like ourselves, insignificant and unworthy, undeserving people. And Jesus shows up and shows them pity and sympathy and care and tenderness and kindness. He's our example. We're to be like Him. We see Him showing up in dire places. See Him showing up in dire circumstances. We see Him showing up in places of great danger and utter impossibilities. Places of great wretchedness and desperate need. Places of sickness and disease. Places of contamination and corruption. Places of brokenness and waste. Devastating loss and utter ruin. And He shows up in these places. And He makes a difference. We see Him showing up in places of inescapable bondage, places of helplessness and hopelessness and even death. And He brings about deliverance and transformation. He brings about satisfaction, fulfillment, peace, joy, assurance, and strength. Again, we see Jesus doing this over and over and over, serving as a reminder of what He did for you and I. He shows up in these places and He gives people a new life. He gives them a new purpose in life. He fills them with passion and zeal. Gives them an entirely different attitude and outlook toward life. If you're here and lost, Jesus can do that for you today. If you're here and saved but spiritually sick, Jesus can do that for you today. He's the remedy. There is no other. In our text, Jesus heals a man. As you read the text, it's obvious this man was lame. He's crippled. He had been so for 38 years. For the thought of the message, we want to call your attention to two statements that this man made. In verse 7, he said, "Sir, I have no man. I have no man." In verse 15, he says, "It was Jesus. It was Jesus." These two statements, made under two entirely different circumstances. The first statement, "I have no man," was made in the context of suffering. And the second, "It was Jesus," in the context of healing. No doubt, both statements were spoken in two entirely different tones. "I have no man." It was not spoken with a tone of joy or enthusiasm. There was dread. There was depression. "I have no man." "It was Jesus." That was spoken in a tone of great joy and great assurance. So I want to preach today on "no man." It was and is Jesus. First thing we want to do is just look at this miracle that took place. And we've again preached on this miracle many times. Just highlight some things and then we'll make application to ourselves. But as you read the account, there are some generalities. We read in verse 1 that the miracle occurred during the Feast of the Jews. There were seven such feasts: Feast of the Passover, Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of First Fruits, the Feast of Pentecost, the Trumpets, the Atonement, the Tabernacles. We do not know which feast it was. There is a lot of conjecture as to which feast it was, but we're not going to concern ourselves with that. The Lord didn't, so we won't either. But reading the account in verse 2, we see also the place of the miracle was in Jerusalem. And it was also at a pool. And this pool was by the sheep market, or the sheep gate. That was the gate through which the sacrificial animals was brought to the temple. It would have been just north of the temple. And this place is called Bethesda, meaning the house of mercy. And certainly what took place is an illustration of the mercy of the Lord. Also, as you read through the account, you'll notice in verse 10 that the miracle took place on the Sabbath day. Again, in verse 2, the place is a pool which is called Bethesda, and this place had five porches, five covered places. This is a man-engineered and a man-constructed pool, and around this pool we have these five porches. And in verse 3, in these, that is, in these porches, lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered. Some of these were brought to this area by their family, most of them probably. Some made it there on their own. There were hundreds, perhaps thousands gathered, congregated at this place. And we see in verse 3, they're all doing the same thing. They're waiting for the moving of the water. Waiting at that which was man-made and hoping. That's a pretty accurate picture of the world today. Waiting at that which is man-made and just hoping. The reason, again, is stated in verse 4. Ever so often an angel would come and stir the water. And if you happened to be at the right place at the right time, and if you were able to step in the water first, you would be healed. So you have all these people congregated. You need to look at these people. They're in these porches. Some are impotent. That is, they're weak. They're feeble. They're disabled by disease. Some of them are blind, sightless. They're living in darkness. Some are halt, that is, they're lame, they're crippled. Some are withered, they have paralysis. These are people that are not well. These are people that are disabled. They're broken. These are people who are broken. There's a lot of broken people today. Most are broken. These are people who are not going to get better through the process of time. They're not going to get better on their own. And they're sitting, they're lying in these covered places around the pool of water. And they're all in desperate need of a miracle. And they're all staring and fixated upon this pool, again, which was manufactured by man. And they're waiting for the moving of the water. It's a very sad, very pitiful scene. It's really a good picture of fallen man. Good picture of the unsaved. In their lost, in their ruined condition. But again, they also portray the sad condition that many of God's people have fallen into. And they're all together in this one place. There's a variety of infirmities, and that's sad. But perhaps sadder yet is the culture that these people were living in. The culture that existed in these porches. You have the impaired, the dysfunctional, and they're all hanging out together. And what do you think they talked about? Well, you can imagine. And there they sit or lie, staring at the pool, just waiting for something to happen. And no doubt conversing with one another, sharing their own stories of gloom and disappointments, telling their stories of pity and how life has been unfair. A culture is being created around this pool. We've preached on that in the past. You better beware of the culture you create and the culture that's being created around you. Because if it's a bad culture, you can become a part of it very easily. And really what happens is they just kind of pull each other further into their own prisons. No one's really helping anyone. They're just pulling one another in their own prisons. This is what happens when people get together and complain about something. They're just pulling one another into their own prisons. And they seem to enjoy it. In these porches, they feel accepted. They may not feel accepted out there in society with the healthy, but in these porches they feel accepted because everybody's broken. Everybody's broken. You ever notice that? Broken people hang around with broken people. They not only hang out with them, they seek them out because they feel accepted. And many times they'll try to find somebody worse off than them, more broken than they are, because then they feel even more accepted. There's a great danger in that, because what happens is they develop a sense of comfort. And though these people are miserable, they're kind of comfortable in their misery in these five porches. And what's wrong with them becomes normal. If you hang around people that are broken, you being broken is normal. It's no big deal. This is what people do. And it's sad. They're like a fraternity. It's a fraternity of misery. And they're trapped in their own disability. Trapped in a mentality. In a culture. But our attention is called to, in verse 5, and a certain man was there. was there. We need to always consider our there. Where are we? And a certain man was there. And we are specifically told that this man had an infirmity. This man was feeble. He was in a state of decay. He is referred to in verse 7 as the impotent man. And we are told that he had been in this condition for 38 years. For 38 years, he was disabled. And he was not getting any better. And he was not going to get better on his own. From what is said in verse 7, I have no man to put me into the pool. And from the command of Jesus to him in verse 8, rise up, take up thy bed, and walk. And what we're told of his healing in verse 9, and immediately the man was made whole, and then noticed the result, and took up his bed and walked. I believe we can safely conclude that this man was a crippled. And again, this was so for 38 years. And in verse 9 or verse 6, we see that he's lying down. It says there in verse 6, when Jesus saw him lie. And then we're told that he had been a long time in that case or that condition. The count does not tell us how old this man is. The account does not tell us when in life he became infirm. Perhaps the man is 38 years old and he's been lame from birth. Perhaps the man is 65. We don't know. But the man has been crippled for 38 years. And he's sitting under one of these porches. And he's staring at the pool, and he's been doing that for a long time as well. 38 years. And all the pain and the discouragement and the sense of hopelessness that he must have felt. Staring at something that he could not reach. He could not reach that pool. He needed someone to put him in that pool. But he's staring at something that he cannot reach. He's hoping for something that he cannot have. It's a very sad life. It's very descriptive of many lives. In response to the question of Jesus, wilt thou be made whole? And we've preached on this. That is a yes or no answer, and the man never gave a yes or no response. And that says a lot, but we're not going to go into that. His response is, sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But when I'm coming, another steppeth down before me. This man has had the experience of being almost in the pool. But then someone else stepped in. This is the language of a man who has given up hope. Sir, I have no man to put me into the pool. And sir, I have tried. I have tried to get into that pool. And every time someone has stepped in before me, I have no man to help me. He's given up hope. He is saying, I have tried many times, but it never works. What's the use? What's the use? He has the attitude. He is blaming others in a roundabout way for his condition. Very descriptive of people. He is saying, I can't be healed because nobody will put me in the pool. And if I try, somebody else gets there before me. It's not entirely my fault. Sir, I have no man. Then we enter Jesus. Five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. There they are, staring at a pool, waiting for something to happen, trapped in whatever their situation was. And here comes Jesus, God in the flesh, the Almighty One, the remedy for all the problems. He's there. He's there. And there is no condition. There is no circumstance. There is no sin. There is no guilt. There is no enslavement. There is no problem. There is no difficulty, trial, disease, or plague that He is not sufficient for. And He's there. He's there. He's unrecognized, but He's there. He is the one who can impact and alter the lives of everyone around that pool. He's there. He's there among the sick, the diseased, and the frail, the infirm, the blind, the paralyzed, the crippled. And He's there on this day to bring healing to a certain man. Not because of anything in this man, but simply because of grace and mercy. Do you remember the day when Jesus came where you were to transform your life? He was there for this certain man. It says in verse 6, Jesus saw him. I'm sure Jesus saw everyone else as well, but not like He saw this certain man. Jesus saw him. That is, with purpose and intent. He saw him lie, and He knew. Now think about it. This man has been lame for 38 years. Jesus was only here for 33. This man's been lame longer than Jesus has been here. And Jesus knew. Knew everything about him. He knew that he'd been a long time in that case. And Jesus came to him. And Jesus initiated a conversation with him, saying, "Wilt thou be made whole?" And notice he did not ask, "Wilt thou be whole?" He did not ask, "Do you want to be whole?" "Wilt thou be made whole?" In other words, if this man's condition is going to change, something has to be done for him. "Wilt thou be made whole?" With that question, did not Jesus draw this man's attention to his condition? He's got him thinking upon his condition. Wilt thou be made whole? With that question, Jesus challenges the very thing that this man thought was impossible. Because after all, I have no man. And every time I try, somebody else pushes me out of the way and gets in. Wilt thou be made whole? Jesus did not ask, do you want to feel better today? He's not talking about a temporary fix here. Wilt thou be made whole? You're broken. Will you be fixed? He's not talking about putting a band-aid on something. Wilt thou be made whole? He's talking about a transformation. And then Jesus, in love, grace, mercy, kindness, said to him, rise, take up thy bed, and walk. Rise. He's lying down. Get up. Get up. And the man stands up. But there's another instruction. Take up thy bed. Rise, bend over, lift up that bed. And now walk. Things that this man could not do on his own. And you look at him, he's carrying his bed. And he's walking. And he walks through that multitude of sick and the diseased and the frail. He's moving past that life. He's leaving that life. He's coming out of that life. In verses 10 through 13, he meets with some opposition from the religious people of the day. But in spite of that, he continues to carry his bed and walk. And in verse 14, we see this man who had for a long time lived on the porch, trapped in his condition, living in the mindset and culture of those porches. And he's in the temple. He's in the temple. No longer in despair. But now there's peace, there's joy, there's victory. He's in the temple, and he's praising and he's worshiping God. And while he's in the temple, Jesus came to him again. And it was at this point that this man learned more about Jesus and how he was made whole. And he left the temple, and he went to that religious crowd. And he said, it was Jesus which made him whole. It was Jesus. It was Jesus which enabled me to rise. It was Jesus that enabled me to bend over and pick up my bed. It was Jesus that enabled me to walk to the temple. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. Oh, that those words would ring in our ears. It was Jesus. When you go by the places where the broken frequent, say to yourself, it was Jesus that brought me out of that. It was Jesus. I didn't bring myself out of that life. I had no man. It was Jesus. Let's make application. Prior to salvation, You and I were dead in trespasses and sins. And we had no man that was able to give us the life that we so desperately needed. I was dead in trespasses and sins, and I had no one that could give me the life that I needed. Being dead means death is a state of separation. I was separated and alienated and estranged from God. And I had no man that could bring me near to God. I was enslaved in darkness of sin and corruption and ignorance, in a state of condemnation and helplessness. And I had no man that was able to bridge that gulf of separation and alienation from God. But you know what? That gulf that existed between me and God is no longer. It was Jesus. It was Jesus that bridged that gulf. You're here and lost today. There is a gulf between you and God, and you have no man that can bridge that gulf. If that gulf is ever going to be bridged, it has to be Him, Jesus. There is no other way. I had no man who was able to break the chains that bound me and set me free. But the chains and the shackles have been broken. And I want you to know it was Jesus that was stronger than those chains, stronger than Satan that bound me. It was Jesus that came and broke the chains asunder. It was Jesus. I had no man. I lived in darkness, and there was no man able to provide light in my darkness. No man was able to scatter the darkness. But I don't live in the darkness anymore. And it was Jesus that transferred me from darkness to light. It was Jesus that took me from the power and the sway and the control and from the influence of darkness. It was Jesus that turned my darkness into light. I had no man. I had no man able to spare me from the condemnation that I deserved. But I am no longer condemned. I've been justified. And it was Jesus, and still is. I had no man able to give me the strength to make me no longer helpless in this matter of salvation. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. Prior to salvation, I was in the deepest and filthiest pit imaginable. In fact, when someone asks you where, a lot of times people say, well, I don't know how to get a conversation going, spiritual matters. When they ask you where you're from, say, oh, I'm from the deepest pit you've ever seen. And explain. It was Jesus. Yes, I lived in the filthiest pit imaginable. Way, way, way down in the sin and the unrighteousness. Way down. Sinking in the filth, and the vileness, and the putridness, the sickness of sin. Way, way, way down in the mire of hatred, mire of irreverence, rejection of God. Way down in the mire of selfishness, hardness of heart and unbelief. That's where I lived. That's where you lived. And if you're lost, that is where you live today. And I had no man. No man had arms long enough to reach way, way down in that pit. No man had arms that long. And even if there was a man with arms that long, they were not strong enough to bring me out of that pit. We were in a pit and we had no man. But you know what? I'm not in that pit anymore. And it was Jesus. It was Jesus. Say it over and over and over again. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. It was Jesus that brought us from that pit. I had innumerable sins. My sins were like the sand of the sea. And I had no man who could remedy my sin. I had no man who could do what my sins needed done. I was guilty of the whole law of God. And I had no man who could release me from that guilt. You may be a lost sinner today and you are guilty before God. And someone may come along you and say, "Oh, it's okay." That will not fix the guilt. That will not take away the sin. You have no man. You have no man that can take away that guilt. Also, God demanded a perfect righteousness. I didn't have the righteousness, and there was no man who could supply the righteousness that I so desperately needed. I had a sin debt that I could not pay. You may find someone that's able to pay your college debt or whatever debt you have, but there's no man that can pay your sin debt. We had no man. But you know what? My innumerable sins have been forgiven. They've been covered. They've been blotted out. They've been purged. They're not imputed to me. Because there was one who could pay my sin debt, and he did. And it was Jesus. Home Baptist Church did not pay my sin debt. There isn't a Baptist church in the world that paid my sin debt or any part of it. It was Jesus. Mom and Dad did not pay any part of my sin debt. It was Jesus. The preacher did not pay any part of my sin debt. It was all Him. It was Jesus. I was lame, could not walk in His ways, and I had no man to enable me, but now I can walk. And it was Jesus. I was blind and could not see, but now I see, said the blind man in John chapter 9. And it was Jesus. I have been reconciled to God. I have been made nigh to God. I have been redeemed. I have been bought with a price. I have access to God the Father. I am a child of God. I am a new creature. I am headed for glory. And it was Jesus. It was Jesus. Make no mistake about it. It was Jesus. And you know what? Since that day, there have been times when we stood at the edge of the Red Sea or at the banks of the Jordan River, and we had no man who could get us across. But we got across. And it was Jesus. And it still is. If you're here today and you're standing before a Red Sea or a Jordan River, it was Jesus that got your cross before, and it's still Him today. How many times we have stood before the massive walls of Jericho? We could proceed no further. We had no man who could bring down those massive walls, yet the walls came down, and we marched on, and it was Jesus. How many times we've come face to face with Goliath? We had no man who could defeat him for us, but he was toppled, and it was Jesus. How many times we found ourselves in famine-stricken times, and yet here we are, we have plenty, and it was Jesus. How many times we find ourselves in the fiery furnace? We're not in that furnace. We haven't been burned. It was Jesus. It was Jesus and still is. How many times we found ourselves in the storm-tossed waters, but the storm was calmed, and it was Jesus. We need to learn that lesson. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. That infuriated the religious crowd. They persecuted Jesus. They sought to kill him. Just because this man went and said it was Jesus that healed me on the Sabbath day. It was Jesus. In case you didn't hear it, it was Jesus. It was Jesus that healed me, he said. And hated him. And that's how it is, still is today with the religious crowd. Who want to hang on to their baptism. Who want to hang on to their free will. Or some other work. I'm here to tell you today it was Jesus. It was Jesus. It was Jesus. And if you're here and lost, it's still going to be Jesus. If you ever are saved, it'll be Jesus who saved your soul. You don't give credit to the preacher. You don't give credit to any man or any institution. It was Jesus. It was Jesus that saved my soul. If the preacher saved you, you're still on your way to hell. If the church saved you, you're still on your way to hell. Has to be Jesus. Can you see your need today? Can you see your sin debt? You have nothing wherewith to pay. You have no man that can come along and say, I want to put a down payment on so-and-so's sin debt. There's no man. But there is one. His name is Jesus. And he's the only one who can take care of the sin debt you owe. Can you cry out to him today? Can you place your trust in him alone today? As we've said over and over and over, everyone, whether you realize it or not, is trusting your soul to something or someone. You're putting your trust in something. But it has to be him. It has to be Jesus. Can you see your sins? Can you see him as the remedy for your sin? Cry out to him today. We that are saved, oh, may we always let everyone know it was Jesus. Someone asks you, why don't you do such and such anymore you used to? Don't say, I've changed. Don't say that. It was Jesus. It was Jesus that changed me. And he can change you too. If he changed me, he can change you. If he saved me, he can save you. It was Jesus. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song. Let's all stand. Brother Larry, lead us in singing.